Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Beth Ellicott.
Are you sure?
I hope so today.
Because you flinched like you weren't quite sure.
I'm like, who am I? Am I mom today? That woman.
This is the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast that happens twice weekly, and it's for needlework artists. Yes.
Art today.
We are art today. Okay. I got to, right out of the gate, I owe Ann Crowell, a gigantic thank you. And if she was anywhere near, I would hug her for 10 minutes. She sent me a messenger note and asked if I had intentionally left off the last crescent color from Royal Garden. Because if I had intentionally done it, fine. If not, I was putting in waffle stitches and still had another layer to put on.
Ooh.
And I said, no way. Yeah, I mean, you know, to myself, no way. So I run downstairs. Sure enough, I did not put in the last layer of crescents, and I already had 5 waffle stitches in.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, I owe her so big. Because 5 waffle stitches as opposed to all of them and then the other stuff. And yeah.
Right. Right.
That would have been awful.
Right.
Yep. So that's your doing crescent stitches and watching TV. That's what happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Ann, thank you. Thank you. And thank you again for saving my butt.
That's good. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Nothing works.
So posting on social media pays off right there. Yep.
Yeah.
And I appreciated the fact that she just sent a private thing rather than make me look like an idiot right in front of everyone.
Yeah. Did you mean to?
Yeah.
Now so, I'm going to go look at mine.
No, I think yours is good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I think you're good. Yeah. You got all the layers in. Yeah.
Good.
And I was so anxious. See, I was so anxious to get to, well, I'll tell you what the mental process was. I was anxious to get to the waffle stitches because on tonight's show, the Wednesday night show, I wanted to demonstrate for people doing the waffle stitches with 2 different threads.
Oh.
And because I was going to do a video and I thought I'll just do it live on the show. And so I was anxious to get to it. And in doing that and watching TV, I blew off the last row of crescents. So.
Whew. Yeah.
Oh, that would have been ugly. That would have been ugly. Can you imagine getting like 3/4 done?
Yeah. And your spacing would be off. So you'd really have to finagle with the stuff. It's like it's going to be a couple threads off. So everything else will be a couple threads off. So you really have to do a lot of compensating would be your problem. I mean, you could make it work if you had to, but man, you would have been pulling. You would have probably at that point said, I need a new piece of canvas.
Yep.
Let's start again.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Kim, send me another kit because we're just starting over. Yeah.
We're just starting again.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that would just drive me nuts forever. I'd just throw it in a drawer and forget about it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks, Ann. Saved me. and I have to say my heart has not quite settled down because that would have been so ugly. Okay, so last night I did a little test with April McNee from the Embroiderers Guild Galleries in New South Wales because we're getting things lined up to do the Remembering Recamo exhibition tour next Wednesday. So that's next Wednesday, 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel. That'll be our Wednesday show as we get a tour of the new exhibit Remembering Recamo, which is an exhibition of Italian needlework. So we got to do just, you know, testing and making sure that we're going to be able to see things clearly and all those things. And we got to do one more test. This is going to be good. They were in the process of hanging stuff and ironing board was out and they were ironing things and so on and so forth. This is going to be good. I'm excited. Yeah.
I look forward to it because it's just a little different than what we're used to seeing. And I think people will just enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. She was walking around. There's an ironing board and an iron. What's that for? Well, we got to iron all this stuff. Cause they had one big piece. It was basically a tablecloth. I think it was just gorgeous. Oh, all that, you know, that lacy white work. Oh man, I tell you, she was showing me some of it. Oh, geez, it's beautiful. Well, I had to iron it, you know, because it had been folded up in a drawer, and then it gets hung up, and yeah.
Right.
Going to be fun. So that's August 5th. Don't miss that. Make a note to join us then, and spread the word too, folks. Help me out. Spread the word. I really want to do more of these, and so if we have a good audience, then we'll know that people want to do it and appreciate it. So spread the word on that. And you can go to wetalkfiber.com. I have an article right there on the first page, and you can just lift the image that the galleries put together for us. You can just lift that and use that. But yeah, I appreciate if anybody spread the word, because I really would like this to go. And if we can make this and people are interested, then we'll look into doing others, because they have a series of exhibits coming up. So that would be, I just think it would be a great thing to offer people. So yeah. Let's see what else. Well, we got so many things going on. August 9, we're doing a live show with Karen Dudzinski as we kick off the Dawn to Dusk stitch along, because we need more stitch alongs.
Yes. And, you know, I realized I had to use my stretcher bars for Royal Garden. I'm making a note now, need 18 inch Evertight. Oops. Won't be able to start unless I have them.
Get them ordered.
Yep. Yep.
So doing that with Karen, that'll be live on August 9. And then also on August 9, the podcast will be with Michelle Guida, and that will be on felt applique. And you think, well, what's that got to do with stitching? That's just pieces of felt. Well, there's needlework involved, and then she combines a lot of needlework. And plus, it's felt applique, and she does a beautiful job, and I find it fascinating. So... That's the podcast. But the also on top of that is the 12th, the Wednesday show, Michelle will be joining us, and she is going to demonstrate or show us her work so we can see it live and ask her questions. But then she's also putting a little demonstration together so we can see how it all goes together.
Nice.
Yeah. So be a chance there to see another type of needlework. And from someone who's quite skilled at it, way skilled at it, and learn a little something there. So the 9th and the 12th will be Michelle on felt applique. So looking forward to that. Sunday's show is Dawn Cook Ronigan, who is the author of Antique American Needlework Tools, a great book. And it's about $30, I think, on Amazon. And you want to own it because it's just fun eye candy. Beautiful. And so we get to hear about putting that together and her collecting of all the pin keeps and thread keeps and all kinds of things. It's amazing what she has. So that is Sunday. Tonight, if you're listening to this before 8 o'clock Eastern, Beth and I are going to stitch. I'm going to be putting crescents in Royal Garden.
And I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm working on Royal Garden. I think I might try the waffle stitches. We'll see how we go on that one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, well, I was going to, but I think I'll be putting in another row of crescents tonight. Mm-hmm. Oops. remind you now to go to Sassy Jack's. You can register for the all-online September soiree event. Huge event. So go to Sassy Jack's, sassyjackstitchery.com. And register for that, because that's all online now. Where it was before, it was two live events, sold out. Now it's online, and so you can participate, which is good.
Yes.
Good, and good.
It'll be fun.
Yes. And then, Gay Ann Rogers. I almost called her.
I looked at her last little post on her News and Views, and I felt so sorry for her. She's like, I've run out of this. I can't remember. Planet Earth Silk, I think is the name of it. She's out of it. Fryneck. She's got, I was like, oh, Gay Ann.
She got buried in orders.
She did.
What was it by, excuse me, by what, 1 o'clock? I think it was 1 o'clock Pacific time. So she'd had the sale on for what, 5 hours? Right. She was already just completely gone.
Yeah, and I'm sure she was shocked. I'm sure she's never sold out that quickly.
Yeah. But. So, yeah, and I was really surprised that that she offered to sell kits beyond her normal, because she'll make up kits. Her sales are always, I make up this many kits, they're gone. And right. She offered to, you can order, and then if you're willing to wait, she'll send you the kit, make it up later. So I think you can still do that. Have you seen where you can't? I think you still can.
No, she's full. She's not taking any more orders for kits.
Okay, no more kits. So we finally found the wall then.
She says she is done. Well, and you can't blame her. No. I mean, to get the supplies in the way she orders, it's going to be hard. People are just going to have to be patient. And that's the one thing I'm going to tell people is you don't email her. She's going to mail something, a first set on tomorrow, Thursday. I do believe, or I think so. It's either this Thursday or next. And then she's still going to be waiting for threads. So if you were in the second wave, you're not going to get until your kids until she gets all her threads in. So you might as well just take a deep breath, read her little news and views, and she will tell you when she's shipping them. And you should get a PayPal notice if she ships your order up. And I know my order won't come in the first wave because although I ordered all four, I ordered one extra heart. And that'll just throw her system totally off. So I know I'm not in that first wave. So it's like, I mean, it'd be very unlikely she would ship mine with those, even though I know I was one of the first people in there ordering.
Yeah.
But that's all right. I can just, I have other things to stitch. I can wait.
Yeah, that's kind of the overall message. If you're sitting there with absolutely nothing else to stitch, then you can be impatient. Otherwise, just go get another project. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, just for people who don't know, that's why she does her sales this way. Is she does a sale, and she has X amount of stuff, X projects, X amount of stuff, and when they're gone, because she doesn't want to spend her entire life mailing stuff out every day. And so she does these sales, and that's it. And then she mails them all out, and then she's done. And like she said, she really wants to design and stitch, not be a mail person. So what does she call it? Mail jail. That's why she does it that way. So just, be patient. And you're right. Don't email her because she's just... you're just sucking
up time. Slow down the process.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Slow in the process.
Yeah. But anyway, she described it as an avalanche. She got buried in orders. So, yep. They're great hearts. And then we need to figure out, we got to do something. Once people have had it, once the orders have gone out, we got to do something with those hearts because those are special.
Right.
I don't know. And they'll
be beautiful.
Yeah. We'll figure something out. We got to do an event of some kind.
Yes. A start along.
Yeah. Start. Yeah. Okay. That's what it is. They're not stitch alongs anymore. They're start alongs.
Right.
Yeah. 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 That's our new specialty. We just start stuff.
We'll start stuff. And it just, we find something new. We'll start something else.
Yep. Next shiny object. Yeah.
Course, all the time.
Yep.
All the time.
So anyway, it's really great that, of course, the Four Hearts is a tremendous design. It's also great that she gets so much support and was able to sell so much so quickly. But, be patient. Yep. Yes. Let's see what else we got going on. Friday's guest, Opal Kim. Opal Kim will be with us Friday night on the live show to show her work. One of those is a full coverage thing that she's just about done with. So, and then she has three or four Mirabilias. I have questions about Mirabilias. Those look like highly sophisticated
I've done one. I think I've done one, and it was a small one. I don't think it was officially a Mirabilia. But anyway, yes. They have lots of color changes.
Yeah, intricate. That's the word I was going for.
That's the word. Yeah.
Yeah. So I assume that, you know, the full blown ones are impressive.
Yes.
With all the beads and everything, I mean, it's flat out impressive. I assume that the instructions and everything all, you know, is just spot on.
Yes, they are very good. And I love it when I see people who change the colors on them. You know, just like they've decided they don't want to do they like everything about it, but they want to change the dress color to a different color. And they change the color. And that would be very hard to do, I think.
Oh.
Because she uses so many different shades. So you've got to find something that has the same amount of shading. So let's say it has 5 shades of blue and you want to change it. Let's use orange. You've got to find 5 shades of orange to change it to.
Ooh.
Yes. So, and people do change them. I've seen them change them. So that's neat.
Huh.
Too. I mean, even just change, a lot of times people do it on different background fabrics.
Uh-huh.
Which is neat, and it changes the look of it. But to change the shading on the dresses very cool.
Well, it seems to be its own little world. I mean, because there are people I know that they just collect them. But it seems to be a world of people who don't necessarily just collect, but they actually stitch them. I mean, things get stitched. And, it's fascinating to me because they're beautiful. Obviously of no interest to me, but, but what interests me is the sophistication of the designs and all that goes into it. And just the commitment that the people who like to do them have for them. And they're gorgeous. I mean, they're just gorgeous. The way she uses the beads and you get like almost a transparent feel for veils and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
She does a great job.
Yep.
She does a great job on them.
Yeah. So that's, so we'll get to hear a little bit about that from Opal Kim on Friday night. So it'll be good. Whew. Lots going on. Not bored.
Yes.
Not bored. All right, so we were talking about last week, we were talking about creativity. Fascinating little subject. And Amina, is it Amina whose blog we were using?
Yeah.
Is that the name, Amina?
Yeah.
I think she's going to do a show with us. I think she at least responded and showed interest, so that would be fun. I think she's in Russia, which ticks off one of my boxes, which is to get somebody from Russia. So I think that's where she's from.
Yeah, well, that's where she says she's from. But she was originally in it. Russian is her native tongue. So
okay.
At the beginning. So I don't know if she moved out of Russia or not, but still, that would still be kind of close to ticking off one of your boxes at least.
Yeah. Yeah. She lives in Jersey now.
but she was Russian.
Yeah.
She's Russian.
I think I can rationalize that. Yeah, I think I can.
Why not?
So anyway, I hope to have her because just reading her blog, she does some nice work and has some good thoughts. So I hope so. So anyway, we were talking about creativity. And then you said after that show, you asked the question, what kills creativity? The other side of that.
Right. And what brought this up was, you know, you keep on seeing, if you see on Facebook, belong to any groups, There's like, I finished my 35th COVID piece. And I'm like, yeah, what do you do with your time? But then there's always, almost always a comment after it where someone comments saying, oh, beautiful work. I haven't touched my stitching. I just can't. And it makes me think, okay, so why one person, you know, gets all this done. And then there's that other who doesn't get any, who says, I can't stitch. And I think there's lots of reasons for that. But I think when I was thinking about that is, I think, you know, they get paralyzed by the events going around them, the stress, you know, what I would call clutter of the mind. You know, you start worrying about, okay, all this other stuff going on, and then you don't feel like doing something creative. You know, I don't know how else to describe it. It's
Yeah. So, I know that feeling. I know that feeling where you get to the end of the day and you, all right, I've got 3 hours, and you just sit down and you're just a vegetable.
Right.
And your head's spinning with things, and you just want it all to stop. And the thought of adding needlework to that, just no, I don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
And like a day or two, I've experienced that, just busy times, just short periods. But I think sometimes, like I had a time in my life, my son had leukemia. It was stressful. It's 3 years of chemo for what he had. Mm. So, but the last year, it was kind of, it was kind of a routine. We knew what was going on. We knew how to keep him from getting sick. So we weren't spending lots of time at the hospital. But all of a sudden, I did not feel like stitching. The only time I stitched was when we had doctor's appointments or if I had taken the kids to piano lessons. But any stitching I did during the day just evaporated. I did not want to touch it. And looking back at that time, I think it was because I was still so stressed about things going on in my life. And emotionally, I just couldn't deal with it. Even though it's a good stress reliever, I didn't feel like doing it. I really didn't do hardly any stitching at all during that year.
And that's kind of a weird contradiction too, because we've talked about how it relaxes you, meditative stitching, so you think you would leap right to it.
Right.
But
I didn't want to touch it. I'm pretty sure I stitched on my daughter's Christmas stocking, and that was probably about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so I could get her Christmas stocking done and hung before she turned 18. Well, actually, she was like younger than that. So, but she was pestering me about it. She was little, so she was like, "When am I going to get my stocking?" Okay, I'm going to do this. So, yeah. but I think it becomes, it's just, if you're under a high stress situation, sometimes even the things you love become, you don't want to do them anymore. And I thought, am I ever going to stitch again? Because I really wasn't enjoying it. So what I did is I took a break from it, total break from stitching, because I do all sorts of stitching. I do hardanger, I do cross stitch, I do needlepoint. And I literally would take paint and throw it on a page and write things down. And that was it. And that's all I did. It wasn't art. There's no art involved in that. But it got me over that little hump, just doing something different in a creative vent that was just a little different, made me get over it. And I did go back to stitching. I love stitching again. And once I got over that one little hump, I've not looked back. I haven't. I always stitch. I like to go. I love it.
Yeah, and see, that's where, people say, oh, I've lost my enthusiasm, I've lost my momentum for stitching, and it just doesn't appeal to me. And to me, that's exactly, at least that's what I say every time, is try something else. Like, try a different, if you do, all you do is cross stitch, go try another technique. Even if you hate it, it could re-trigger you. Or go try, do something else that's creative, some other craft or something. Just break the mold, yeah.
Right. But the other thing is, and it goes along with that, the clutter idea. We've talked about this, or you've talked about it, and I noticed Mary Corbett talks about it, when you have too much clutter around.
Mm-hmm.
so you got the clutter in your mind, which sometimes is hard to get rid of. But sometimes if you clean up your workspace... I'm a messy. My kids laugh because they're like, "Mom, you're such a mess." But there are times I'm like, I cannot see the top of this area. It is all I gotta clear it all off, put everything where it belongs, so I can see my work area and start again. And yep. Mary Corbett even shows photos on her. She's brave. She shows photos on her blog and her newsletter.
She's been through so many clean up, organize cycles. It's almost comical.
but if we all know that if you have too much stuff around you, too much of the the clutter, if it's not organized, you can't find what you're looking for. you're kind of like, well, I guess I'm not going to do this today.
Yeah.
So that kind of stops it.
Well, and that, you know, I'll defend Mary Corbett. I mean, that's her business. She has to churn stuff like a machine. And so you can see how she could get her workspace just buried in stuff as she's trying to get projects for the next 10 weeks done. I mean, I understand that. You and I don't have that excuse.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah, and my table right now, is way overdue for a major purging. Yes.
Yeah. It just becomes where you, to me at least, if I have too many projects up and out trying to work on them, I don't want to work on any of them, and I can find something else to do with my time. I'm like, oh, I don't even want to sit down and try to stitch, because which one am I going to work on? There's too many here. It just makes me go a little bit on the crazy side, and I just have to clean it up. I'm like, okay, so this and this is going downstairs until I get this much done on X project, and then I'll rotate them through.
So that's what you do. You force yourself to set some kind of a progress limit or point.
Right. So like I'm working on the Linen and Threads mystery sampler for 2020. I finished July. So once I got July done, the motif's done for that, it went downstairs. But now August 1st is coming, and he'll load it on Friday, actually, I think. They'll load it up on the site. Mm-hmm. I'll bring that up. I'll put other things away. I'll get whatever motif that are due on that piece. I'll get it done, and then it will go downstairs, and it'll be out of my site. But something else has to go.
So you literally remove it from your stitching area then?
Yes. Yes. Oh. Because if not, it's too much clutter. I stitch in my living room. So if I block the view of the TV... Then other people get mad, and that's not pretty.
No.
So, you know, we want to keep everybody in the house happy.
Well, that's
and if they can't use the remote, then they really get mad.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. That'll put you over the top right there. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because see, I have a corner with a table and shelves, and so everything is right there, and I have. All the projects I'm working on are all immediately accessible. And then I have a basket on the desktop, and that's where all the threads are for the projects, the active projects. And so it's all right there. But when I work, my back is turned to all that because I'm working on a stand, and the stand faces away from all that. So I don't see it. I don't see it, but it's all right there. But what builds up for me is there's the left third of the table is where things just get shoved. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon the pile gets such that it starts sliding into the middle third of the table. And that's where we're at today. And I don't know what it is about that pile. And I'll go through and clean it up. And I don't know what it is about that. That builds up. It's just stuff. And I need to find a way to make that go away. Because if I had that third of the table, it sure would make things more pleasant.
I find I have to, I know Gay and Rogers suggested this at one point. She says, have a large project, a medium project, and a small project.
Yes.
And I kind of keep to that rough guideline because I find if I have, like right now we're working on Royal Garden. That's a big project and it's complicated and it requires you to kind of think about it. It's not like I can just sit and mindlessly stitch if I'm tired. So that's my big project. So I can't have, if I'm actively working on that, I can't work on something else that's big. So my beloved, I'm pulling my own threads out for that one. It's the Hands Across the Sea and it's reversible and it's Montenegrin stitch and that has a whole basket of threads that go with it because I have to pick through and decide which thread I'm going to use. I don't know. So I have all my threads all together in this big basket. Well, it's got to be put away if I'm working on Royal Garden because if not, it's just too much stuff out in that living room area. And it becomes clutter And it's just like, okay, it's got to go. Something's got to give. Something's got to go.
Okay, so that's interesting. So you have to, it detracts from your work then.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I mentally, I just block it out.
No. No.
Yeah.
It can stay there for maybe a day or two, but then after a while, I'm like, okay, this is just in the way. I'm not doing anything with it. Let's just move it out, and then I'll pull it back out when I'm not working on Royal Garden. When I get to a stopping spot at Royal Garden where I'm ready to say, okay, let's work on this again. You know.
That's interesting. So then downstairs is all your storage, shelves and everything?
Yes. Yes. And then when that gets, like, let's say you're in a hurry and you're just throwing it in the room. And that's what happens, especially when the kids were little, you know, if it was crafty stuff, it all went in there and you're like, okay, I cannot. And this happened, like in the middle of this COVID thing, I could not literally walk in that room anymore. And I was like, this is, I mean, there was like a little path you could walk through.
Oh, Beth.
And it was, I know. And I was like, this has got to go. I've just got to pull things out. I've got to throw things away and do some organization. It didn't take me but a day, you know, a few hours of a day because everything had a home. But it was just, I was busy helping my husband. I was busy doing other things. We're gardening, whatever. And so it ended up that became a mess. And I didn't even want to go in there to like look for a thread or whatever. And I was like, okay, this has got to be cleaned up because I can't do anything in here. No one can find anything in here. And it's still not by any means neat, but at least I can use the room again. Right. So, and I'm not the only one. I know there's other people that are like me that are like, yeah, that they, if you do more than one craft, especially, you know, you have the stuff and then you've got to store it. Right. But eventually you've got it, that becomes clutter and you've got to decide, okay, I've got to do something with this. I've got to straighten it up, got to get rid of it, use it, pass it on, whatever.
Yep.
Or you can't be creative. It does block the creativity. It makes you not want to work on things.
Yeah. See, that's it. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause see, I am, like my work, my desk, wherever I've worked, my desk is by all standards a mess. But for me, it's focus on what I'm working on. And so, you know, things come and go as I'm, say, working on a magazine, an issue, and it just gets, I just throw it aside. You know, and a lot of people will deal with it so it doesn't accumulate. But see, mm-hmm. I'll just throw it aside. Just go over there on this pile because you're in my way right now. And I don't care if the stuff piles up. And then there'll come a day where, all right, this is, yeah, like you, this has all got to go. And so there'll be this purging. But that day could be months. And it becomes a mess. And Margaret and I share the same, used to be a bedroom for an office. And she's neat as a pin. Her desktop is all put away. Everything's put away, all organized, in file folders, everything. Complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Right. And yet we're both, in general, very tidy people. But my workspace, just that's just the way I work. And usually what stops me is I have stuff piled up so close to my keyboard and mouse that I can't function anymore. And that's what'll make it. Then the baskets come out and it's time to
clean. It's right. time to shred. It's time to do with something, you know, take it to recycle. Yeah. And that's, I tend to work that way. And then it's interesting. I think different people, I read this, people have different levels where they can handle the clutter. If you can ignore it and still get your work done, you're great. But, you know, everyone has that different level. I know when I get to a certain point, you know, everyone has that point that just tips over. You're like, okay, I got to clean. I got to get this mess cleaned up. It's bugging me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And see, and that, yeah. And that same thing happens to me with my stitching, but there, I think in general, I keep things cleaner. Well, number one, I keep things cleaner organized, not cleaner, but organized, because I clean an awful lot because I'm always freaked out about whether threads will get dirty or not.
Right.
So they're always covered up and everything. So that I clean that more, and by doing that, then things get organized.
All right. Okay. Let's say you're changing a thread though, in a piece. How often do you do that? Let's say you're not changing anything on Royal Garden because you have the kit.
Right.
But let's say you pulled a piece and you didn't like the colors. How do you organize those threads when you pull all those out?
Oh, well, see, I would make the change like at the store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I would say, for instance, I have another one of Debbie Rowley's that I did not care for the colors at all, and I wanted it all black and gray. Well, I went to the store and we laid out what she had spec'd, and then we picked blacks and grays and whites to replace that. So then I would just do it that way. I don't sit there from a stash and change.
Okay, and so you don't take, like, let's say, because, like, when I'm changing my Beloved, I have a whole bunch of threads out because I'm not sure if I'm going to use this pink or this purple or this green. So I have to kind of look through the stash of colors. So you don't do that.
No, I would have decided that all up front. I would have made a decision and stuck to it. And then on the fly, if one didn't work out, then I'd just change that one. But no, I would not have taken, no, different approach.
Right.
Yeah. No, I like sitting down. When I sit down to do a project, I like having in my hands exactly what I'm going to do. Whether it's prescribed by the designer or changed, I want to know this is exactly where it's going. And I tend to stick with it. It's pretty rare that, most current example is Hannah Longstreth, where that lighter colored thread on the Russian tea cake, the jury's still out on that. And so that one may get changed. But then it would just be that one color. So, yeah. But no, to sit down like you're doing, I decide all that up front. Yeah. And then stick to it.
And I just can't, because then I'm like, well, maybe this color would be better. Or how will I know if they're not? Because they colors change when they're next to each other.
Right. Right. And see, for me, see, and I'm not that sophisticated. I'm not sophisticated at all when it comes to colors. So for me to sit there and play with that would suck the fun out of it. So I would make those choices up front with someone who's much better at color than I am. And then who, in most instances, the process would be, all right, let's take out what the designer prescribed. And then, all right, you want to go with reds, for instance. So then let's get out some reds and figure out the values and get that laid out. And then I would say, all right, all that's fine. These two colors just don't look right to me. Let's find something else. And then when I walk out of the store, then that's it. It's done. And I stick to it. But no, to do it on the fly, I don't have that kind of sophistication. I can't, that's not in my wheelhouse. I'd like to, but I just don't. Yeah. Just not me.
Right. And I think it's just a different approach, you know, just a different way of doing it. And I don't have, my problem is I don't have a needlework store close by. So if I order, I order online. I remember one time I was looking for a red and I called Needle in a Haystack and I said, well, we have something in kind of this color. And she says, well, I have a couple. And I said, just send them. I'll use them eventually, you know, because I have no way to go to a store and look at threads.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that makes it harder.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and the plus side of that though, is just send me those colors. And then for the next project, you probably have
right.
You have a stash that you can just sit down and do it yourself. You have your own store right there. Yeah.
I have my own store. Yeah. It doesn't stop me from collecting more threads, though. It's kind of people collect charts. I tend to collect threads.
Yeah. And see, the other thing for me is I have that male red-green color blindness. So, and I'm always sensitive to that. And so the crutch for me is get somebody who knows colors far better than I do so that what I'm seeing will go together. Because when you say, all right, I want to do it all in reds. Well, what reds work? That's where I start getting in trouble. Because if we go fire engine red, I'm good to go. But you start getting into the oranges or off into the purples, see, I start having trouble. So then right. Somebody with a better eye than I, help me make sure this is going to go together. And, I just have to deal with that, always have. And because sometimes I can put together, if I did it straight up, I'd put together some colors that go, people just go, I'm not sure where you're headed with that one. So I just need that assist when it comes to the shades. And because, it can get a little wonky. So, and I've tried, like I have Trish Burr's book on color, and I've tried to study it, and it doesn't stick with me. And I think a lot of it is, it would stick with me if I would do it all the time. But, to read a book and understand the colors complementary and all that kind of stuff, it all makes sense. But I think you really need to sit down with threads and apply that to have it really sink in and to have it be a functional skill.
Right.
You can't just read a book. Right. Yeah.
No. And her book is, to me, that would be a fun book to go and just do the exercises in it. Just start doing your own sample swatches.
Right. Right, and that's a great book because she'll put together palettes for you as examples, but then you can also just take those palettes and use them. And
right.
So for somebody like me, that's an excellent crutch. Go to that book and say, all right, I want to do something in reds. Well, it's likely there's something in there that will work, and then mm-hmm. I could go from there. So. Yeah, that's the way I have to, that's the way I prefer to do it, but it's also the way I have to do it, is to settle on all that stuff up front. Otherwise, it may not work. So, yeah.
and I think just, it is just a different people have different approaches,
Right.
And how they deal with changing things out, or if they never want to change out colors.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
just want to leave them the way they are, and they're happy with them. They just use whatever the designer tells them. And
right.
They're good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, Royal Garden, I just happen to like the way Debbie did that. So bought the kit, sign me up. But now her opal, her Glitz and Glamour opal that I've been working on, and I really should finish up because I'm like 3/4 done. Now that's one where somebody gave me the kit. And there's no way on God's green earth that I would use those colors, those pale opal colors. Mm-hmm. I like the design, but there's just no way if I were doing it out of scratch and buying the threads, I'd even come close to using those colors. But I got the kit and I enjoy stitching the design. So I can tolerate the colors. So,
right.
So I just do it that way. But yeah, if you'd handed that to me, I'd have said, no, thanks. Well, and that's like, Dawn to Dusk. I looked at all those colorways and, none of them appealed to me at all, but I knew what I wanted to do it in. And then when Karen said, well, I'll put that together for you, then thank you, Karen. And then she did it. I lined them all up on the table. Looks beautiful to me. We're going with it. And,
And I bought the tuxedo colorway of Dawn to Dusk, and it's not normally something I would do. And I said, I really would like something with reds in it. Mm-hmm. Now I have enough red threads in my stash to change that. And I still haven't decided if I'm changing it or not. I figured I know I have to do those black outlines on there.
Right.
The octagon. So I'll move from there, but I will probably add some sort of red to that. I don't know. It to me, it needs It needs something else in there. But it looks gorgeous the way it is. And that's my problem right now is like, you know, if I just did it the way it's charted, it's going to be gorgeous. But then in the back of my head is like, oh, but if I added just a little bit of red, like, no, maybe she just, I don't know. I'm still going back and forth on that one.
Well, but that's the fun of it. You know, that's the fun of it. And who says, you put it in there and you go, oops, I guess I was wrong. Out comes the red again.
Right. I just did that on a piece I'm teaching for my guild. And I thought, oh, I'm going to change this color. And I did it in a color. And I did all the other little squares around it. And I looked at it and I was like, this square is coming out. It just looks wrong. It's wrong. I was wrong. I admit it. This comes out. Out it goes. Back to the original colorway.
Yep. Well, and isn't that part of creativity too?
Right.
Is being able to say, no, that was dumb. It's coming out.
I was wrong and made a mistake, but that's all right. If you don't make mistakes, then how are you going to ever move forward?
Yeah.
You know, and say, okay, that was wrong. I'll try something else next time.
Right. But and that's the other part of it too. That was wrong, but file that away because it might be right the next time.
Mm-hmm.
It might be exactly what you need the next time. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, this whole creativity thing is fascinating because there are so many aspects to it, and it really requires that you just let your mind open up. Right.
And not just be set in this like, I've got to do exactly what everyone else is doing. I only can do what the designer says. Like, you know, let yourself be part of it, you know, even if it's just changing a little bit, you know.
Right.
Make it yours.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no rule. And I think some people go through life, stitching life, under the impression that they must do what the designer did. And no, you don't have to. Well, that my beloved sampler. Now, see, that I would, for samplers, I kind of have a personal rule that I stitch them as designed because that's as close to the reproduction as possible. But now you're taking that, you know, perfect example. You're taking that and changing the colors and making it your own while doing the base design. But, and there's nobody says you can't do that. You know, go for it.
And I think, you know, even I keep on hearing people say you don't have to do the whole piece either. I think that's the other thing. I think sometimes we get locked into this. Well, I've got to do all of it. And like, well, so just like you've been saying, with take a piece of the sampler out and make a little pin keep or a little pillow to share with somebody. You don't have to do the whole sampler. Maybe there's a motif you really like in it. Just take it out. Use that, you know, incorporate it however you want.
Right. And with band samplers in particular, take your five favorite bands and make a piece out of that.
Right.
You don't have just take five bands and, you know, whatever, six or seven, doesn't matter, and make a piece that you like. And you don't want some big long thing. You want a square thing. Take them, use them. Yeah. No, that's just it. To me, you almost got to look at the chart as a tool to create what you want. Granted, we all buy charts because what we see in the picture, what we saw somebody stitch really appeals to us and we want to do that. Yes. Given.
Right.
But in many ways, look at it as a tool. All right, I bought this tool. Now what can I do with it?
And I know with my beloved, I have to say, I almost didn't buy it because I didn't like the colors and I was drawn to it. There's something about the motifs that I just loved. And I was like, but I'll never stitch it in that colorway. And it's a sampler and maybe I should stitch. And I'm thinking, you know what? There's no needlework police who live at my house.
Right.
And so I'll stitch it. It'll hang in my house and it'll be fine.
Yep.
And I'll like it. And I'm enjoying stitching it.
So, yeah. So this creativity thing, I mean, there's so many aspects to it. It's opening your mind a little bit and saying, hey, I can do what I like. And, And I think that for people, it's a level, you know, as you stitch, and there are levels, to me anyway, levels that you progress through. You know, first it's just figuring out how to thread a needle, and you work through, and then you start looking at designs that you're stitching and going, I just don't care for that. And then you make that step where I'm going to change it. I'm going to do this. And then, you know, you start to move on to the next thing. And from my perspective, then you're at that level where you look at everything in terms of how can I change it? You know, I like this one, I'm going to stick with it, but all these others I'm going to change in some way. And I'm not quite there. I'm not quite there yet. I'm not opposed to changing things, but I will tend to still buy and stitch things as designed and do them just because I like, you know, I like what was designed. I don't stitch things I hate by any stretch, but it's interesting. All right, we're going to call it, I think.
All right.
That's going to be it. We got through most of the list.
Yeah.
The rest will hold.
Next time.
All right. So if you're listening tonight at 8 o'clock, we have Beth and I stitching. Friday night, we have Opal Kim, and then August 5th. Now, write this down and spread the word, please. We're going to have that tour of the Remembering Recamo Italian Needlework exhibit from Australia. April McNee going to be our tour guide. And I'm telling you, just what little bit I saw, it's going to be really, really interesting. Yeah. Looking forward to it. All right. That's it.
All right.
Thanks,
see you
Beth.
Tonight.
Bye.
All right. Bye.